Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it is a Wednesday before Thanksgiving. It is November 26th. We're wishing you a beautiful Wednesday and hope that you are getting ready to have a great weekend with your family and friends. And I'll tell you what, be careful out there, though, because if you're traveling in the Midwest and a few other portions of the country, well, the weather, it could be a problem. I was just talking to some friends in Michigan, and they're telling us they're expecting a major, major winter storm to move through, and it could even knock out some power lines and whatnot, so that could cause some additional travel issues. So stay warm, stay close to us here at EWTN, and we have great programming for you all weekend long. Of course, it's the holiday weekend coming up tomorrow and Friday. We are off, but we are still going to be bringing you Catholic Connection and two very special editions that my wonderful producer, Richard, Jesse, and I have been working on the last couple of days just for you. So keep that in mind when you're stuffing the turkey tomorrow morning and getting ready for all the good stuff to happen with your family and friends. All right, speaking of good stuff, today we have the wonderful Julie and Greg Alexander from the Alexander House talking about being thankful for marriage. But also, I wanted them to take a deep dive because they know all about the beautiful teachings of the church on marriage, and they are thrilled, as are all of us, actually, with this incredible document that just was released this week, all about marriage and the Catholic faith and monogamy. What concepts, right? Monogamy for the faithful, and how it's not limiting. It's actually so fruitful and beautiful. And the way they write this, the way they teach it from the Doctrine of the Faith at the Vatican, which was released, I think it was released on Monday. It really is so beautifully written, and we'll get the opinion of that from Greg and Julie Alexander of the Alexander House. We have Shrines and Wonders Wednesday, and so I'm going to talk about this, some really cool place that nobody goes to, and it's in the life of St. Francis, and it has to do with one of the battles in which he was in before he began his conversion. It's pretty cool, and we went there over the weekend. Then Joan Lewis is joining us, speaking of Italy, and we're going to be talking about, of course, the Holy Father, his trip to the Middle East. He's going to be in Turkey tomorrow on Thursday. So the big question is, will he have Turkey in Turkey on Thanksgiving, an American holiday, because he's an American pope? Obviously, that's not the most important question, because there's a lot of other issues that he'll be discussing, but Joan will fill us in. That is the first hour of the program with Greg and Julie Alexander, with our mornings on marriage, and then our wonderful Joan Lewis, and of course, Shrines and Wonders Wednesday, which is based on my book, Italy Shrines and Wonders, published by EWTN earlier this year. Alrighty then, well, if you are planning to travel, here's a look at the weather from the National Weather Service. We have travel conditions that will be challenging. That's how they're describing them, across the Northern Plains and the Great Lakes and the East Coast. And this is through tomorrow, and actually not just through tomorrow, but they're saying the entire holiday weekend. Heavy snow, blizzard conditions for the upper Midwest and Great Lakes region through Thanksgiving, to be followed by another strong storm for the Plains, Great Lakes, and Northeast this weekend. Strong winds are expected, with several systems adding to the travel difficulties. Now, that's in addition, of course, to the packed airports and train stations and roads. So please be very careful if you're traveling this weekend, and keep the weather in mind. It's 3 minutes past the hour. Do hope your Wednesday is going well. And again, we are wishing you a beautiful Thanksgiving weekend. But let's get started with the news on a Wednesday, November 26th, and see what's happening. A major story on CatholicNewsAgency.com this morning. They're reporting that multiple lawsuits are alleging the Archdiocese of Chicago kept two priests in active ministry in spite of years of mounting complaints of child sexual abuse being leveled against them. The suits allege that the archdiocesan officials allowed the two priests to continue their ministry even after church officials were aware of their history of abusing children. The law firm involved claims the Archdiocese had been warned about both priests as early as the 1960s. The alleged abuse victims said they were unaware of the Archdiocese's alleged prior knowledge until recently, when previously concealed internal documents became accessible. The law firm alleged the Archdiocese relied on a pattern of relocating clergy with known problems after then addressing this underlying misconduct. The Chicago Archdiocese, meanwhile, did not immediately respond to a request for comment on the pending lawsuits. At Castel Gandolfo, Pope Leo XIV answering journalist questions about or outside Villa Barberini, as he described last night his upcoming apostolic journey to Turkey and Lebanon as a trip marked by hope and peace. On Ukraine and the Middle East, the Holy Father is urging, always seeking dialogue, to end war.
I would invite all people to look for ways to abandon the use of arms as a way of solving problems, and to come together, to respect one another, to sit down together at the table, to dialogue, and to work together for solutions for the problems that affect us.
Do you have a message for Israel and Hezbollah?
The same thing, to encourage all people to look for peace, to look for justice, because oftentimes violence occurs as a result of injustices. And I think we have to work together to look for greater unity, respect for all people and all religions.
Thank you.
Referring to his first apostolic journey to the Middle Eastern countries, which will also include a stop for the anniversary of the Council of Nicaea, the Holy Father underscoring the message he will bring is one of peace and hope, especially in this Jubilee of Hope. And Wednesday's general audience was one of the Holy Father's last official appointments in Rome before his apostolic journey begins tomorrow. The Pope speaking of the visit before the pilgrims gathered in St. Peter's Square, which will be his first foreign journey, at the end of the audience, describing the countries he would travel as rich in history and spirituality. In other news this morning, Russia is reportedly likely to reject the latest peace deal drafted by the U.S. and Ukraine. This according to the New York Post. It was reported earlier that Ukraine had agreed to a deal to end the war with Russia, with just minor details needed to be ironed out.
It's really up. Look, the way it's going, if you look, it's just moving in one direction. So eventually that's land that over the next couple of months might be gotten by Russia anyway. So do you want to fight and lose another 50, 60,000 people? Or do you want to do something now?
President Trump speaking on things on board Air Force One on Tuesday. Ukraine and Russia are in Abu Dhabi for peace talks. A U.S. led plan has been changed after Ukraine objected the parts that call for it to cede territory to Russia. And Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, according to Catholic News Agency, is suing his own state's housing agency for rules that allegedly restrict Christian and other religious organizations from receiving public funds to serve homeless and low-income people. The lawsuit alleging that rules established by the Texas Department of Housing and Community Affairs only allow organizations to receive federal and state funds for homeless and low-income housing programs if they agree those programs will be entirely secular and will not include any religious activities. According to the lawsuit, CNA says those rules violate religious liberty protections in the First Amendment of the Constitution and in Article 1, Section 6 and 7 of the Texas Constitution because they put restrictions on religious entities where participation in public programs in which secular entities can freely take part. In a news release, Paxton also saying state agencies have no authority to force Christians and other religious organizations to censor their beliefs just to serve their communities. And Mark Mayfield tells us the FBI plans to interview Senator Mark Kelly and five other Democrats who encourage military members to refuse to follow the orders. Oh, sorry about that. Another story here. Former New York Department Commissioner Robert Tucker is speaking out for the first time. Sarah Lee Kessler tells us his decision to quit after Mamdani was elected New York City's mayor.
Robert Tucker, a wealthy Jewish philanthropist, said in an interview with CBS Morning, set to air this week, his religion was a factor, saying he was turned off by the Democratic Socialist campaign. Mamdani, who will be the city's first Muslim mayor, has many Jewish New Yorkers worried about his anti-Israel, pro-Palestinian rhetoric. Police Commissioner Jessica Tisch, also a Jewish philanthropist, has decided to stay on, prompting UJA Federation to call her decision reassuring amid escalating anti-Semitism. I'm Sarah Lee Kessler.
And the search is on for a Virginia high school football coach wanted for child sexual abuse material. Police say they've obtained warrants to charge Travis Turner with possession of child porn and using a computer to solicit a minor. He was reported missing on Friday after authorities went to his home in Appalachia. Monica Nelson tells us that the U.S. Postal Service is announcing plans to raise its shipping prices, not over the holidays, but next year.
USPS filed a notice with the Postal Regulatory Commission for the adjustment, and now customers can expect a 6.6% increase for Priority Mail, 5.1% for Priority Mail Express, 7.8% for USPS Ground Advantage, and 6% for Parcel Select. The adjustments have been approved by the Board of Governors and will take effect January 18th. USPS said shipping service prices are set by market conditions, unlike mailing service prices, which are determined by the Consumer Price Index. I'm Monica Nelson.
The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services announcing lower prices on 15 prescription drugs covered by Medicare, including Ozempic and Wegovy. Another round of price cuts on 10 drugs, including some for heart disease and diabetes, also expected to take effect next year. Andrew Whitman tells us prosecutors on New York's Long Island say they've busted up a major and very sophisticated porch pirate ring just in time for the holidays.
More than a dozen people are connected to the alleged scheme where they hacked into the FedEx delivery system to track when and where packages showed up. More than 200 phones and other electronics were stolen between October 2023 and February of this year. Prosecutors called the group a criminal enterprise, saying they had insider information that allowed them to hack into the FedEx delivery systems and pinpoint Verizon and AT&T tracking numbers. Andrew Whitman, NBC News Radio, New York.
We alluded to this in the weather forecast, but there's a polar vortex set to bring cooler temps to the central and northern part of the country for the holiday weekend. Priscilla Thompson reporting it comes on the heels of a storm that already spawned a destructive tornado near Houston.
Folks came out to see all of this devastation around them. And so right now it is the focus on cleanup ahead of the holiday. We know that some 100 homes were damaged in all of this.
Meantime, millions of Americans, as we mentioned earlier, hitting the road for the Thanksgiving weekend. AAA estimating almost 82 million people will be traveling over the holiday weekend, which is up by about 2% from last year. And since the Thanksgiving travel crush is on, here's some advice from a frequent traveler. This Dallas woman has some suggestions for anyone heading to the airport.
Everything goes smoother if you're patient and kind and helpful, and it just makes it easier on everybody traveling.
The TSA expecting to screen over 18 million flyers between today and next Tuesday. And today, by the way, is the busiest with 52,000 flights set nationwide. Officials say air traffic control staffing is back up to pre-government shutdown levels and flights are largely on schedule. Forecasters warn, though, flights are likely to be impacted by that lake effect snowstorm that we discussed earlier and expected to sweep across the Midwest and the Northeast. Again, a record 82 million Americans are projected to travel this Thanksgiving by planes, trains, and automobiles. Okay, and I don't know about you, but this story, when I read it this morning and put it in the newscast, reminded me so much of the Jetsons. For those of us old enough to remember that cartoon, air taxis could soon be taking off in Central Florida. The State Department of Transportation has been preparing for the shift since 2021. It's been helping cities plan zoning and infrastructure for the new technology. A new report shows the Tampa-Orlando Space Coast corridor would benefit the most, thanks to the booming business, leisure, and commuter travel there. And by the way, an air taxi is a small commercial aircraft that makes short flights on demand. I'm telling you, it's the Jetsons coming to life. Just saying. We'll be right back with our Mornings on Marriage with our good friends, the Alexanders from thealexanderhouse.org. They're available to speak and for coaching. They're amazing. And we're talking about a new church document on marriage. Stay tuned. Always great to have my dear friends, Greg and Julie Alexander from the Alexander House with us. They were on our wonderful pilgrimage. Gosh, it just seems like yesterday. Did such a great job with our couples, and they do a great job really with all married couples that are in need of encouragement and help for their marriage. We're going to get into this beautiful document released from the church earlier this week in praise of monogamy. But first, I want to mention that Julie and Greg are very, very busy. And Greg, and I'll go to you first, but I know you're still looking for some disciples to come on board and help out, right? Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, you're welcome, Sarisa. Thank you. Yes, we're looking. We're always looking. But people are responding now. We have 15 couples trained. We have 5 couples currently in training and just growing all over the place. A lot of concentration right now in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and just having people who feel called to help other couples who are in need. And the beautiful thing, a lot of our couples that serve as marriage disciples, their marriages have been in trouble also. So we're able to match couples with couples that have walked in their shoes. And it's just been a beautiful experience and watching the growth take place.
Yeah, we're so excited, Teresa, because we have a couple, Marty and Diana. They've been through our process. They've been through the program. Their marriage is transformed. Now they've been marriage disciples for over a year, and they've been called to be our first marriage disciple missionary couple, where they're going to be there to expand the Alexander House mission. And it's such a need. So thank you so much for all your support and just letting people know. It's a blessing.
Well, of course. And the website, again, is thealexanderhouse.org. Okay, I was so excited. I know we had a whole other topic, and we could probably squeeze it in, too. Obviously, Thanksgiving for marriage. But this ties in, I think, directly. This document is so beautiful. And Greg, I want to get your take on it. I'll go to you first, and then Jules, you can jump in. But the idea of this coming right now in our culture that is so toxic still, you know, despite some of the positive changes we've seen, but a beautiful document in praise of monogamy. So tell us, kind of give us your thoughts and what this is all about.
Yeah, Teresa, you know, I think the main point of this document is to show that monogamy isn't a rule that is meant to hold you back, so to speak. You know, the church is saying something more profound and something more beautiful, you know, that when a man and woman choose to give of themselves mutually to each other, they're not limiting their love by any stretch of the imagination. You know, they're actually opening the door to a love that can grow deeper and stronger and more meaningful over a period of time. You know, and as you know, the church sees this marriage relationship not only as a sacrament, but as truly a covenant, and it should reflect the way that Jesus loves his church, which is in a faithful, completely, and without division and divided attention, if you will, always focusing on that beloved, that one other in the relationship.
So I'll ask both of you, why do you think the church is emphasizing this right now? Greg, I'll go to you first, and then Julie, feel free to jump in.
I think because of the things that we see in our society that kind of divides the marriage relationship. You know, you have polyamory. You see these relationships springing up on social media, Facebook and things of that nature, where people are just not looking at the one person anymore. But the world is starting to say that, you know, you have more love to give. You can't just limit it to that one person. It has to expand, and you can experience that love in more people other than just one person in a relationship.
Yeah, Teresa, people might be shocked to think, well, why would the church have to put out a document like this where you make a mention of it? But in the work we do and in the world that we see, there's so much confusion. And that's where the clarity of the church, the voice of the church needs to be here at this time, because it goes back to that whole understanding that the documents come out to not only read, but then to be disseminated and to understand that we are here to understand that marriage was a design of God, not the world, not the culture. And his design is to be exclusive. And for that one couple, the man and the woman, to come together to have boundaries. If there's no boundaries, you open the gate for such division, such confusion, it's a mess. So this document is critical because it speaks of that whole thing, real commitment, exclusive love. You know, it's the whole understanding of we need security, we need commitment, and we need belonging. And that's what marriage, as the church has always said it is committed and exclusive to the couple.
So in terms of giving this to couples, Greg, could this be something used as a tool in your ministry at the Alexander House, do you think?
Oh, absolutely, Teresa, and especially for some of the younger couples. You know, probably in the last 2 years, Julie and I have personally worked with at least 10 couples that after about a year of marriage, they're ready to call it quits because they don't have this understanding, that foundational understanding of what marriage should be. And so they're, again, turning to these other sources, alternative old boyfriends, social media, looking for a fulfillment that should come from each other. And that's why I love what you do here on the show. You bring these current events to the surface so that we can have these discussions. I venture to say that very few Catholics even know that this document was presented this past Monday. And so we have to be out talking about these things and letting people know that this comes from Holy Mother Church, which is a result of God through the Holy Spirit giving us these teachings so that we can live what the Father wants us to live and do and be in our lives.
Well, it's so frustrating to me that you have something so beautiful that's so needed. If you think about, I mean, we've proved in many ways in terms of marriage prep, but something like this, and Julie, I'll go to you. Do you think this should be something that, that priests and those who do pre-Cana and, you know, the pre-marriage prep should have and make available to couples?
Absolutely, 100%, Teresa, because couples want unity. They want to feel connected and on the same team. And oftentimes, because of our culture and the busyness of our lives, we're tired, stressed, discouraged. And what we've noticed over and over again is that when we go back to what the church teaches and it coming from the voices of the church, the leaders of the church, we need to be told and invited into the truth of what the church teachings are, what the meaning is, especially in marriage. We talk about that often of having, you know, the mass, the parishes are filled with 98% of married couples. And yet there's the ignorance grows so deeply because we're not taking time to study. We're not taking time to read and understand what the church teaches or even God's plan for marriage. So having these voices come from the church, the priests at the pulpit, to be faithful, to be honest, to be intentional to each other so we can know that we are on the same team. We're not here to fight against each other, but to here to work and to build each other up and to edify one another out of reverence for Christ.
I think this should be something, I don't know, this is just off the top of my head, but what I would love to see is at the church level, if they're working with an engaged couple and they're prepping for marriage and they're meeting with the priest, say, okay, because I know you guys were given some really good assignments from a priest and that changed everything. We'll talk about that. I'm going to keep you on for another segment, by the way. I just made an executive decision, so because I have like 15 other questions that I'm not going to get to, so we'll do Shrines and Wonders Wednesday next week. This is more important, talking about marriage, but I would love to see priests or maybe, you know, a deacon who's doing marriage prep say, okay, I want you two to sit down as an engaged couple and read this document, make notes. What does it mean to each of you and how do you plan to apply it to your marriage? I mean, to me, you have to make it practical for them, right, Craig?
Absolutely, Teresa. And we go back all the time where that day we sat in front of that tribunal vicar, he could have espoused the teachings of the church, but he didn't do that. And there was something about him issuing that challenge that I took upon myself to go back and to find those answers. Because mm-hmm. the beautiful thing is that once you start reading, then your heart's on fire, and you just want to continue to read and consume all these beautiful teachings. And as I did that evening, going back to Julie, when I called into the room, I said, look at this stuff. I mean, we're not living our marriage like this. And so again, the beautiful teachings are there. We just have to continue to create the platforms and the resources that are going to allow these couples to be able to discover it. And I love what you're saying right there at the parish, because the parish is our faith home, so to mm-hmm. speak. As it was for Julie and myself when we were hurting, you know, our first thought is, let's go to the church. What does the church have to say? And unfortunately, there was nothing there to receive us. And so we need to change that fact of having programs, not just marriage preparation, not just programs for troubled marriages, but also continued enrichment to equip couples with what they need so that in hopes that they don't fall upon those difficult times.
Yeah, and it becomes so evident and obvious in our workshops and our talks and in our discipling that we can work with a couple who's been married for a week, a month, or 50 years, and they've never heard this information. Not blaming anybody, but the understanding mm-hmm. is us to wake up and realize that what we do, we live what we are, what we teach ourselves. Our education now, especially for young adults and kids, comes from the internet, comes from social media. Mm-hmm. And if we don't discount or speak the truth against the lies that they're being shown, then they come into this and thinking, this is just normal. This is fine. I've seen this my whole life. I've watched other people that are heroes or stars or whatever in my life, they do it and it's okay. But the reality is the devastation. We've already had several couples come to us, Teresa, that the couple's newly married and they're confused because they can't understand how to make it work because it has become so.
Let's continue this at the other side of the break because I want to keep you on. We will get back to Shrines and Wonders Wednesday next week, but more with Julie and Greg Alexander from the Alexander House. We'll be right back. Welcome back, Catholic Connection, 27 minutes past the hour. Normally at this time on Wednesdays, it's Shrines and Wonders Wednesday, but I just realized, I don't know why, but they only had one segment with Julie and Greg. So I made an executive decision wanting to keep them on for a second segment because this is so, so important. This beautiful document really is breaking news out of the Vatican. Just came out this week. A beautiful document in praise of monogamy. It's so beautifully written. It's just so tender and thoughtful and so badly needed. Julie and Greg Alexander are with the Alexander House, a beautiful marriage coaching ministry. They've been doing this for over 20 years. And Julie, I know you were saying before how helpful it is to have something like this from the church to help people embrace in their marriages, right?
Yes, absolutely, Teresa, because we can't speak enough about what people have to do on a daily basis in this world to make their marriage work mm-hmm. and to make it successful, because there's so much pulling at us. There's so much in coming into, you know, barging into our lives, or we're allowing into our lives, that takes us away from focusing on what God intended. You know, we can say, well, you know, I can do whatever I want. The freedom is I can be with as many people or invite several people into our life and to our marriage. I think that sounds awesome. I mean, the one gift that God gives us is the gift of the other, to help them grow closer to God and to get to heaven. And we say, often when we read the document at first, Teresa, I was like, one's enough. How can you handle 2, 3, 4, 5? I don't know. No, I don't want any more than that. And it's like,
she was talking about the neighbor next door, not me.
Yeah, one neighbor.
She could probably have 50 of me, but go ahead, sweetie.
Anyway, but it goes back to that point where it's on purpose the church gives us what she does. But the sad part is people don't hear it. And I'm not blaming the priests. I'm not blaming the bishops. But those of us that are married and those of us that have said I do, we need to learn and study what the church teaches, because it's our responsibility to do the best at what we can do, especially when it comes to marriage, the lifelong commitment.
And Greg, don't you think, too, that with something like this, it reminds us, I think, the overall teaching of the church, because the whole idea of having that relationship with God is surrendering your will to His. That's the message. And you don't find peace until you're living out the will that God has assigned for you, a perfect plan that He has for you in marriage. But I think just overall in our Christian journey is that we don't want to surrender. We think we know better.
Oh, yeah, because that's a dirty word in our society today, surrender. You mean I have to give up my control to someone else?
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, and God is not this tyrannical, you know, lording over you, kind of cracking the whip. He's a loving God. And as you alluded to, He already has a plan for us. So if we come back and unite our desires for what it is that He's asking us to do, it's going to be a beautiful relationship, because what father would want something great for his children? But again, we haven't grown with that understanding. We haven't grown to understand what it means to be in relationship with God in Christ. You know, I love our faith. I love the traditions. But too many times we grow up just going through the motion. And so we haven't been able to transcend from those physical things that we do to understand the heart of the relationship of the Father and what He wants for us, which is why He gave us marriage in the first place. You know, His relationship is a gift. And He has given us each other as a means to learn to love us how He loves, to experience His care, His forgiveness, His support, and all those beautiful things that come with a relationship that is lived in the way that God had intended.
Yeah, even if we go with the one comment, the one scripture, Teresa, that, you know, the truth shall set you free. Not my ideas, not my understanding, not my way, not my thoughts, my feelings, especially my feelings, but the truth will set you free. And the truth comes from the church, and that is what we need to hold on to to be able to live life peacefully, joyfully, and in the way that God intended in the first place.
I don't know about you guys, but when I saw this, I was so thrilled. I mean, the teachings are there. The catechism is clear. You know, John Paul II, of course, gave us so much on marriage and theology of the body. But to bring this out now, I think the timing is very, very strong. It's so needed, especially with this whole issue of transgenderism and the whole idea regarding, you know, what marriage is supposed to be. It's something old fashioned. How do you see this, Greg, being used practically by people? What would you suggest?
I think going back and first of all, just looking how we are called and should be choosing each other every day. You know, just simply when we first wake up, as you and I do, first thing we do is we go to God in prayer and thanksgiving for the mere fact that He allowed us to wake up that morning. And then as we kind of progress through the day, you know, the little phone calls, the texts, the things we can do to be able to allow our spouse to know that they're being thought of, that I love you, that you're important, that I can't wait to get home. And, you know, and then when you're back in the physical presence of each other, you know, sitting down and having those little small conversations, you know, the hug and kiss on the forehead when you come home, coming back and ending the evening and praying together, giving God thanks for the things that you've encountered that day, but also maybe thanks for what your spouse has done for you in the context of that day. So again, we have to become intentional about those things, just like we do in our jobs. I mean, we don't even think about entering into a work day without having a schedule and things to do. Well, we need to take that same mindset and mentality and direct it towards our marriage relationship, not just living it by the seat of our pants, but being intentional about the things that's going to create that depth and that beauty.
Yeah, and Thanksgiving is a great time to do that, right? And I know originally that was going to be our discussion until this fantastic document came out. But since we have about 2 minutes left, Julie, I'll go to you first. What ways can we show Thanksgiving for our marriage and for the gift of the sacrament of marriage, do you think?
Absolutely. One, we can come together in prayer and thank God out loud. Heavenly Father, I thank you for the gift that you've given me and Greg. I also ask you for the grace to be able to love him and to nurture him and to care for him in the way that you've called me to, Lord, so I can help him understand your love for him. And then go to the other person. Thank you so much for, name three things. Three things. I thank you for last week, the way that you helped me clean the house. I thank you for what you did in your comments and your compliments that you gave me last night when we went out to dinner. And I thank you for the gift that you are. And I just ask that that we both come together and to encourage each other and lift each other up. And then all those things that we do often, Teresa, we tell each other what's wrong, what we don't like about one another, but we often forget to say what's good and what we're thankful for.
Greg, any thoughts?
Yes, I want to go back to one of the things when we work with couples in the discipling process is that we really teach them the importance of what it means to be that servant spouse. Again, getting away from that selfish mindset and mentality, but learning that true love is about that ability to die to oneself for the sake of the beloved. And so going back even to those emotional needs, learn what it is about your spouse, whether it's an affection or support, our security, our appreciation, those things that they desire, because those are the things that brought us together in the first place. It's just that we haven't named them as such. So we're left after 2, 5, 10 years of marriage, not knowing what it is that we need to be doing for each other or what actually taps into the heart of the other person. And so as you have that simple conversation to identify the needs and what they look like and sound like, those are indeed your marching orders each and every day to say and do those things that's going to fill the heart of your beloved.
Yeah, and Teresa, real quick, I know that this is something that Greg loves me for, and he loves when I do this. But he was so...
I'm already getting nervous.
He was so touched by the document. Literally, he's already started to create like a study guide, an informational...
Oh, good. I was going to ask you about that. Oh, please do. Yeah.
Yeah, so see, now it's two of us on him. He's going to be so mad. But it's okay. But it's good because he has a way of taking things that the church has promulgated and making it simple and easy for those to understand and implement. It's mostly about the implementation, to be able to take the things and practically do it for your marriage. Live it out.
Okay, so that's what we're going to do on the next segment. Really quick, because we only have about a minute left. So we are going to break it down once you do your summary. No pressure.
Okay.
No pressure at all. But maybe we can do that in the beginning of the new year. I mean, December, we want to give you a little break because it's the holidays. We're still going to have you on, but think about maybe for January or even for Valentine's Day, Greg. How about that? That would be fair. They give you enough time, right?
Well, that'll tie right into our amazing marriage university that will be online as well. So that's a little teaser.
Welcome back. 39 minutes past the hour on a Wednesday morning edition of Catholic Connection, moving into the Thanksgiving weekend. Of course, one of the only Joan Lewis, Jones Rome, on the phone with us. Look like another packed audience this morning. And the Holy Father, speaking of packing or packed, is getting ready to go on a very important apostolic journey. Thanks for joining us, Joni. What's going on?
Well, it's so exciting. I'm excited about the Pope's trip only because I've been to Turkey and Lebanon, to each of those countries several times, covered Pope Benedict's visit to Lebanon and in 2006, have many beautiful, exciting, wonderful memories of people and places and events, and I know that the Holy Father, you know, is going to be overwhelmed by some of the same people and the events, certainly, and the fact, you know, that this is his first foreign apostolic international trip is going to be watched by so many people. And the fact that, as a matter of fact, his first visit is not to a, you know, Catholic or Christian majority country, but to Turkey, and for ecumenical reasons, which we, I think everybody knows by now, that he's going to mark the 1700th anniversary of the Council of Nicaea. And people may not think much about such an anniversary or Nicaea, where's that, you know, why are we talking about it? Well, 1700 years ago in 325, we were given, in a council called by the Emperor Constantine, we were given what is called the Nicene Creed. You know, there are two possibilities. There's the Nicene and the Apostolic Creed at Mass, and the Nicene Creed is one of those, and it's been here for 1700 years. So there are obviously the Pope talks so much about Christian unity, and in fact, a big document came out about unity in the faith on Sunday at the Angelus. The Pope announced his document talking about unity and talking about how much the Nicene Creed can be a big stepping stone on the path to unity. So I think we're going to hear a lot more about that when he's in Turkey. The big day there of commemoration will be on Friday. And he's going to visit Ankara. Of course, that's the capital. He'll be in Istanbul. And then, of course, he goes for about 2.5 days to Lebanon. He'll be in Beirut and so forth. But it's going to be a pretty amazing trip. And I was reading something today about, because looking at the background on the division of non-unity of Christian churches, I found it fascinating that here we are in this document coming out on Sunday about Christian unity, and a theological and historical overview of the Council of Nicaea. And you've got Eastern churches and Orthodox churches who are praising the Pope, Leo specifically, for being very clear on theological matters. And could you possibly receive better praise than clarity? Teresa, it's you and me and our work. It can be a pope. It can be a CEO of a company. But what everybody wants, no matter what the product is, they want clarity. And so right. When you have the Orthodox saying that one of the things they so love about Leo is his clarity on you know, on theological matters. I mean, I'm sitting alone at my desk, and I was just going, you know, my thumb up, hey, thank you so much for saying that. So it'll be very interesting, obviously, to see his encounter in Turkey and obviously read his words. And it's going to be looking at dotted I's and crossed T's and everybody analyzing every word he says. But, you know, we said this before. My favorite word with relationship with to describe Leo is serenity. And I think we're going to see that no matter who he's with on his trip in coming days, we are going to see and sense, and he's going to transmit it to us, a serenity, whether it's looking at other Christian leaders trying to figure out what can be done to bring us all together, ut unum sint, as John Paul said, that they may be one. I just think it's going to be one amazing trip. And the Lebanon part is more out of solidarity with people. This is a nation that in recent years with the, I think it's, what, 4 years ago or so, that there was that huge explosion in the port in Beirut.
Oh, I remember that. You and I talking about that.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, just it destroyed physically buildings, companies, homes, et cetera. But then it just destroyed an economy. And so you have a people trying to get back to, you know, let's define normal. People trying to get back to normal. And there have been problems with governments not having leaders for a certain period of time, you know, long periods of time, like a year. So I think just to encourage certainly the people in Lebanon with what they've gone through. Hey, I'm here. I know what you've been through. And I and, you know, so many others in the world have been praying for you for years, ever since that significant physical event, that explosion, and then obviously the So it certainly is going to be a fascinating trip. And as I said, everybody, you know, the one thing I do know is that I think the journalists could have had a second plane, because there were a lot of people who wanted to get on the flight, some who've gone on paper trips in the past that didn't quite make it. I mean, you've got a limited number of seats, and you've mm-hmm. got far more people applying, you know, to be on the papal plane. Oh, in fact, I do know some journalists who are going on their own. I mean, they won't be on the papal plane, but they'll be covering it because they're, you know, going on their own to both Lebanon and Turkey and Lebanon. So when you have that kind of information, people wanting to be there, people in the media, it's really going to be something to see. So everybody who's, you know, listening to us now, there's going to be reports on radio, but EWTN will be covering all the television events that the Vatican has on its schedule for that trip. So, you know, just check on the EWTN site or wherever you want to watch it. And some of the things, anybody who goes to the Vatican News site, every single day, they will have any of the live coverage will be seen on that site. So just exciting times. And this, you know, Holy Father, in just a little over 6 months of his papacy, he's really been on top of so many things. And this is the one thing he hadn't done yet, was to travel internationally. So I think we're all pretty excited about that. And he did mention that, by the way, at the audience today.
Right.
He did ask. Mm-hmm. He asked the faithful to pray for him. And, you know, yep. Teresa, he was so lucky. It has rained here for 2 days. It's been cold.
Right. Same thing as Central Italy. Yeah, same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. But mm-hmm. If you have a papal event in St. Peter's Square, God seems to turn the knob that says sunshine on. it's really wonderful. So yeah. Sunshine and, you know, temperatures weren't that warm, but still a nice-sized crowd. I didn't see any figures, but I know it's something around 20,000.
Checking it out this morning in preparation for our segment today, and it looked the weather looked great, and the crowds were very large again. So in terms of his message, he's going to be, it sounds like a very busy trip, but we were kind of joking, but I wonder if they're going to do something special for him, because he is going to be in Turkey on Thanksgiving Day.
Thanksgiving.
He's an American Pope.
An American
right?
Pope, I know.
Right.
Just so ironical. But I am sure somebody, I don't know, even when they, months ago, were looking at the date of his trip, somebody thought, oh my gosh, you know, American Pope, this is Thanksgiving Day in America. So I have no idea how the chefs in Turkey would prepare an animal by that name and make something available to the Holy Father, because, let's see, he gets there about, I think it's 12 or 12:30 noonish tomorrow. So
So perfect time for a lunch, for a turkey lunch.
Perfect time for lunch, and so he'll have two meals, you know, in Turkey the very first day. But, I mean, one of them, you know, will there be some kind of emphasis? Even if somebody brought out a stuffed chicken, have him celebrate.
Or what about
today.
Turkey shawarma or chicken shawarma would work, right?
There's so many things that you could do, and maybe mm-hmm. we'll all be surprised and find out that the Turkish people have some kind of national turkey, and they're going to serve the Pope, you know. So, mm-hmm. Well, the Pope was asked about that last night when he was leaving Casa Gandolfo after his mm-hmm. after his daily sojourn there, his overnight sojourn. He was asked by the media about that, you know, now if you're an American Pope, but your Thanksgiving will be celebrated in a country called Turkey, you know, what do you think? He said, more than and would anybody be preparing turkey and as a food? And he said, of course he would have no knowledge of that now, but he said more than anything else, he said for him it is a day, even if he didn't have turkey, it is a day for gratitude, for expressing Aww. Gratitude, something which a lot of us perhaps just even in our daily life don't express enough, because there can be not just big things, you know, the Pope's save, excuse me, the Holy Father, the God, saving somebody's life, a miracle. Yes, that's a big thing. But there's so many little things every day in life. I find 1,000 opportunities. Mm-hmm. My mom always looked for them, a way to be positive about something, to thank somebody for just a little gesture. It can be opening the door to a car or a restaurant or whatever. Or somebody just, you know, a nice business person who's waited on you, and you just say, oh gosh, you know, thanks for your care and concern. Give them a smile and just say, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. So many things can change a day from being, you know, just another day into something special because of something you've said to somebody or that someone said to you. So the Pope said gratitude is, you know, what's going to be at the center of his day for sure.
Well, I don't know if you saw what the transportation secretary said, but Sean Duffy is calling for you know, a better approach as people. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. He was saying, be respectful, be kind, you know, dress better, dress nicely. Not talking about, you know, the old days when people used to wear white gloves and the women wear two-piece suits or dresses on planes and high heels. But don't go to, you know, the airport in your pajamas. Be polite. Be patient. Pack some extra patience.
Yeah.
And thank the people at the airport. Thank the flight attendants and, you know, and be kind. And it is amazing how far that will go, as you said, and what perfect timing, because it is Thanksgiving weekend, right?
Yeah, people traveling. And I always love, I spend time on the outfit that I wear while traveling. I always like to look nice, you know. I mean, I could go out to Home Bake tomorrow and I still want to look nice and dress well. That's just a family thing. But the thing is, with so many people, the way they do dress today, it's like, woo, you stand out. I get complimented by people. There's no reason not to look nice and be comfortable. There has to be something in your wardrobe that answers both of those requirements. And I love it because I do try to take care. And, you know, when staff on a plane or at the airport, oh, gosh, you look so nice today, or I love your, you know, whatever I'm wearing. It does make a difference.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I saw that my mom and dad were both beautiful dressers. He won an award one year for being one of the 10 best dressed men in Chicago. And my dad
How
was
sweet.
Always. Oh, I know. He was always beautifully dressed. He was a very nice looking, very good looking man.
Well, like but, you. Fruit doesn't fall far from the tree, my dear. We're out of time. Have a
Here
great Thanksgiving and look forward to hearing all about it next week. Our own Joan Lewis with Joan's Rome. We'll be right back on a Wednesday. Let you know what's coming up in the second hour of CC with TT. Stay tuned. Wishing you a beautiful Thanksgiving for you and yours. Tomorrow we will have special editions of Catholic Connection both Thursday and Friday. And hope you keep us on in the background while you're getting ready for the big holiday. And we pray for your families and pray for us, please, here at EWTN Radio. Coming up in the second hour of the program, I don't know if you had the opportunity to read this beautiful piece that was on the National Catholic Register website on November 19th. It's all about the story of a mom from Massachusetts. Okay, now her cause for canonization has been approved for being opened and studied. The Vatican's Dicastery for the Causes of the Saints, Ruth McCulloch's life merits further investigation to see whether someday the Church should declare her a saint. She is a devout mom, devout wife, devout pro-lifer, and she's a Catholic convert. And her husband is going to be joining us in the next hour of Catholic Connection on EWTN Radio Extra, so you don't want to miss that. Really looking forward to it. The article was so beautiful and tells her story and has this adorable picture of her children, just so precious, and the whole family there. So we'll catch up with Dr. Michael and find out what this means to him and just share the inside story of this beautiful, beautiful sister in the Lord, a convert to the faith, Ruth, whose cause for canonization has been approved by the one holy Catholic and apostolic faith. So that will be the second hour of the program, along with the news and whatnot. For 2 cents, we'll talk a little bit about Thanksgiving, as Joan Lewis said. I'm going to dive into what the transportation secretary is asking us to do and how that really, personally, I think it's a very Christian approach to how we should travel and how we meet people in public. We'll discuss coming up. Thanks so much. We'll be right back on EWTN Radio Extra. Happy Thanksgiving.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it is the second hour of Catholic Connection here on EWTN's Radio Extra as we're moving into the Thanksgiving weekend and the beginning of Advent. Wishing you a beautiful Thanksgiving holiday with your friends and family, and also a beautiful start to the Advent season, which will be upon us, believe it or not, coming up on Sunday, because then we'll be out of ordinary time and the calendar, liturgical calendar for the church will switch, of course, into Advent. Looking forward to our program today. As I mentioned, if you were listening in the first hour of Catholic Connection with Joan Lewis, I want to kind of dive into what the Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy is asking us to do. I think it's really beautiful. It's in relationship to traveling this weekend. And he says, you know, think about being kind, being thankful, being complimentary to maybe the TSA people, maybe the flight attendants, the pilot, thanking the pilot, and also dress differently. And I'm going to talk about that in relationship to Thanksgiving, because we, as Joan Lewis said in the first part of the program, actually the end of the second hour, the first part of the program, talking about how it really, I think, when you're kind to people and when you dress, and I'm not talking about getting all dolled up and getting your hair done or, you know, doing your makeup, you know, to the nth degree, but just presenting yourself well, because I think it just makes people feel better about themselves. And when you do that, you feel better, even if you are, you know, rushing to the airport, somewhat tired. It's just a different way of looking at life. And then the scriptures for today, particularly the responsorial psalm, among my favorite, talking about giving thanks. And we know that the word Eucharist is all about what? Thanksgiving. So it's very appropriate for us to be thankful for all the gifts that God has given us, especially himself in the Eucharist and the one holy Catholic and apostolic faith. Speaking of which, we're going to take a deep dive into the beautiful testimony of Ruth McCulloch from the East Coast, from Massachusetts, whose cause for canonization has now been approved for opening by the Vatican. Her husband, Dr. Michael, is going to be joining us about his late wife, Ruth, and what it means to hear that your wife, her cause for canonization has been opened. How moving. Now, the only thing I think that comes close to this, and when we hear about, for example, the case of St. Gianna Brettimola, her husband, Pietro, was at her canonization along with their children. So you can imagine that Michael must be just going through so many emotions and such appreciation, being this is Thanksgiving weekend, for this idea that his wife's cause for canonization, who is a convert to the faith, a pro-life warrior, a mom, a wife, and who passed away of cancer, that she is being considered now for canonization. Incredible. We'll find out all about her, what this means to the family, and what it says to us about our beautiful faith and the cost of canonizations in general. So that's the program in the second hour of CC with TT. Glad you're with us. And again, wishing you a beautiful Thanksgiving. Okie dokie. So the weather could be problematic. I want to be real honest with you. We'll have an update in the news as well. Here's what the National Weather Service is saying the next couple of days. Travel conditions will be challenging, to say the least, across the Northern Plains, Great Lakes, and East Coast through Thanksgiving. Not just tomorrow, but they're saying through the entire holiday weekend. Heavy snow, blizzard conditions for the upper Midwest and Great Lakes region through Thanksgiving, to be followed by another strong storm for the Plains, Great Lakes, and Northeast this weekend. Strong winds are expected, with systems adding to travel difficulties. So again, pack your patience, be kind, be thankful, because it's Thanksgiving and it's going to get busy at the airports and at the train stations and on the roads as well. It is a Wednesday morning. It's November 26th, the day before Thanksgiving. We appreciate your listenership and are thankful for you, our listeners. Let's get started with the news on a Wednesday morning, the day before Thanksgiving, here on EWTN's Radio Extra. Catholic News Agency reporting this morning that multiple lawsuits are alleging the Archdiocese of Chicago kept two priests in active ministry. This in spite of years of mounting complaints of child sexual abuse leveled against them. The suits alleging that the archdiocesan officials allowed the priests to continue their ministries even after church officials were aware of their history of abusing children. The law firm, according to Catholic News Agency, claims the Archdiocese had been warned about both priests as early as the 1960s. The alleged abuse victims said they were unaware of the church's alleged prior knowledge until recently, when previously concealed internal documents became available. The law firm alleging the Archdiocese relied on a pattern of relocating clergy with known problems rather than addressing the underlying misconduct. The Archdiocese did not immediately respond to requests for comments on those lawsuits. At Castel Gandolfo last night, the Holy Father answering questions from reporters outside Villa Barberini, he described the upcoming apostolic journey to Turkey and Lebanon as a trip marked by hope and peace. And regarding Ukraine and the Middle East, he's urging always for people to seek dialogue and to end war.
I would invite all people to look for ways to abandon the use of arms as a way of solving problems, and to come together, to respect one another, to sit down together at the table, to dialogue, and to work together for solutions for the problems that affect us.
Do you have a message for Israel and Hezbollah?
The same thing, to ask and to invite, to encourage all people to look for peace, to look for justice, because oftentimes violence occurs as a result of injustices. And I think we have to work together to look for greater unity, respect for all people and all religions.
Thank you.
Referring to the apostolic journey to the two Middle Eastern countries, which will also include a stop for the 1700th anniversary of the Council of Nicaea, the Holy Father underscoring the message that he will bring is again one of peace and hope, especially as we wrap up this Jubilee Year of Hope. Regarding efforts to stop violence against women on the day yesterday, which was dedicated to that issue, he says that mentalities must change, beginning with the education of young people. And the Wednesday general audience today was one of the Pope's last official appointments in Rome before his apostolic journey to Turkey and Lebanon, which again, as we just mentioned, begins tomorrow. The Pope spoke of the visit today, which will begin his first foreign journey, at the end of the audience, describing the countries he would be traveling as rich in history and spirituality. And again, the journey would be an opportunity to commemorate the anniversary of the first ecumenical council held in Nicaea. Russia is reportedly likely to reject that latest peace deal drafted by the U.S. and Ukraine, according to the New York Post. It was reported earlier that Ukraine had agreed to a deal to end the war with Russia, with just minor details needing to be ironed out.
It's really up. Look, the way it's going, if you look, it's just moving in one direction. So eventually that's land that over the next couple of months might be gotten by Russia anyway. So do you want to fight and lose another 50, 60,000 people? Or do you want to do something now?
President Trump speaking on the matters on board Air Force One yesterday. Delegations from the U.S., Ukraine, and Russia in the Middle East for peace talks. A U.S.-led plan has been changed after Ukraine objected to parts that called for it to concede territory to Russia. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton suing his own state's housing agency for rules that allegedly restrict Christians and other religious organizations from receiving public funds to serve homeless and low-income people. Catholic News Agency reporting the lawsuit alleging that rules established by the Texas Department of Housing and Community Affairs only allow organizations to receive federal and state funds for homeless and low-income housing if they agree those programs will be entirely secular and will not include any religious activities. According to the lawsuit, those rules violate religious liberty protections in the First Amendment of the Constitution in Article 1, Section 6 and 7 of the Texas Constitution, because they put restrictions on religious entities for those taking part in public programs in which secular entities can freely participate. In a news release, Paxton saying state agencies have no authority to force Christians and other religious organizations to censor their beliefs just to serve their communities. Sarah Lee Kessler tells us New York former fire department commissioner Robert Tucker now speaking out for the first time following his decision to quit after Zoran Mamdani was elected as the New York City mayor.
Robert Tucker, a wealthy Jewish philanthropist, said in an interview with CBS Morning, set to air this week, his religion was a factor, saying he was turned off by the Democratic Socialist campaign. Mamdani, who will be the city's first Muslim mayor, has many Jewish New Yorkers worried about his anti-Israel, pro-Palestinian rhetoric. Police Commissioner Jessica Tisch, also a Jewish philanthropist, has decided to stay on, prompting UJA Federation to call her decision reassuring amid escalating anti-Semitism. I'm Sarah Lee Kessler.
The search is on for a Virginia high school football coach who's wanted for child sexual abuse material. Police say they've obtained warrants to charge Travis Turner with possession of child porn and using a computer to solicit a minor. He was reported missing last week after authorities went to his home in Appalachia. And the United States Postal Service, as Monica Nelson tells us, is announcing plans to raise shipping prices. That'll happen in the new year.
USPS filed a notice with the Postal Regulatory Commission for the adjustment, and now customers can expect a 6.6% increase for Priority Mail, 5.1% for Priority Mail Express, 7.8% for USPS Ground Advantage, and 6% for Parcel Select. The adjustments have been approved by the Board of Governors and will take effect January 18th. USPS said shipping service prices are set by market conditions, unlike mailing service prices, which are determined by the Consumer Price Index. I'm Monica Nelson.
The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services announcing lower prices on 15 prescription drugs covered by Medicare, including Ozempic and Wegovy. Another round of price cuts on 10 drugs, including some for heart disease and diabetes, expected to take effect next year. Andrew Whitman tells us prosecutors on New York's Long Island say they've busted a very large and sophisticated porch pirate ring just in time for the holidays.
More than a dozen people are connected to the alleged scheme where they hacked into the FedEx delivery system to track when and where packages showed up. More than 200 phones and other electronics were stolen between October 2023 and February of this year. Prosecutors called the group a criminal enterprise, saying they had insider information that allowed them to hack into the FedEx delivery systems and pinpoint Verizon and AT&T tracking numbers. Andrew Whitman, NBC News Radio, New York.
And a polar vortex set to bring cooler temperatures, as we mentioned in the weather a few minutes ago, to the central and northern U.S. for this Thanksgiving holiday. Priscilla Thompson tells us it comes on the heels of a storm that spawned a destructive tornado near Houston.
Folks came out to see all of this devastation around them. And so right now it is the focus on cleanup ahead of the holiday. We know that some 100 homes were damaged in all of this.
Meantime, millions of Americans are hitting the road for Thanksgiving weekend. AAA estimating almost 82 million will be traveling over the holiday, which is up by 2% from last year. And speaking of the holiday, we know the Thanksgiving rush is on today. And this woman from Dallas has some advice for anyone heading to the airport.
Everything goes smoother if you're patient and kind and helpful. And it just makes it easier on everybody traveling.
The TSA expecting to screen over 18 million flyers between today and next Tuesday. And today is the busiest with 52,000. Yes, you heard correctly. 52,000 flights scheduled across the country. Officials say air traffic control staffing is back up to pre-government shutdown levels and flights are largely on schedule. Forecasters warning flights are likely, though, to be impacted, as we mentioned, by lake effect snow expected to sweep across the Midwest and the Northeast. And again, a record 82-83 million Americans are projected to travel this weekend by planes, by trains, and by automobiles. And speaking of travel, the transportation secretary is telling us to be nice. We'll explain up next.
Kind of mind-blowing about intercessory prayer? God generally only grants the prayers that fit what he wanted to do anyway. So what's the point of us asking? Why does he tell us throughout scripture to ask for things in prayer? I think he chose to wait on our prayers to give us his blessings. And I think he chose that because he wants to share the joy of being distributors of his grace with us. He wants us, by our requests, to unleash His healing, His blessing, and His miracles in the world. It wasn't enough for Him to just bless us. He wanted to share the joy He has when He blesses with us by making us necessary parts of that blessing. Archbishop Fulton Sheen said that the graces of God are hanging from heaven by silken threads, and prayer is the sword that cuts them down. So ask God boldly for things today and share the joy of raining His grace down on a needy world. That's what intercessory prayer is about. Prayer changes things. Send us a message at connect@reallifecatholic.com. This is Chris Stefanik on EWTN Radio.
Minutes past the hour. It is a Wednesday morning, November 26, 2025. Great to be with you live here on EWTN's Radio Extra, hour number two of Catholic Connection, and the day before Thanksgiving. Many of you are already either packing or packed, jumping in the car, running to the airport, maybe taking a train to be with friends and family for the beautiful upcoming holiday weekend. Tomorrow is Thanksgiving. Today's busy, busy travel day, and I think today and Sunday are the busiest travel days of the year, if I remember correctly from all the reporting I would do about these days when I was a street reporter many moons ago. So we know as Catholics that the word Thanksgiving means, well, Eucharist means Thanksgiving, and it always helps to be thankful. And I thought it was really beautiful, the responsorial psalm today. So we'll start with that, then we're going to talk about a few other things related to gratitude. So the responsorial psalm is from the Old Testament book of Daniel, and I love this. It reminds me of St. Francis of Assisi, whose Canticle of the Creatures, or Canticles of the Sun, was very similar, which I'm sure, being a lover of Scripture and the Lord, that St. Francis pulled some of his thoughts from this as well. Bless the Lord, sun and moon. Sing praise to Him and highly exalt Him forever. Bless the Lord, stars of heaven. Sing praise to Him and highly exalt Him forever. Bless the Lord, all rain and dew. Sing praise to Him and highly exalt Him forever. Bless the Lord, all winds. Sing praise to Him and highly exalt Him forever. Bless the Lord, fire and heat. Sing praise to Him and highly exalt Him forever. Bless the Lord, winter cold and summer heat. Sing praise to Him and highly exalt Him forever. If we have time, I'll read you the Canticle of the Creatures, which is so similar to this responsorial psalm for today from Daniel. But let's think about this. Here we are entering into Thanksgiving. And if we really want to be beautiful witnesses, and I'm not just talking about around the Thanksgiving table or this weekend when you're hanging out with friends and family and trying to be kind when someone with whom you disagree strongly about politics or other issues, something happens and you bite your tongue out of Christian respect, or you move on to something else to make sure that the weekend goes okay for everybody else. But we're also talking about strangers we meet, because one of the best ways to witness is, you know, just showing up and having a good attitude. That's why I really appreciated the message that Sean Duffy, who's our transportation secretary, who's also a Catholic brother in the Lord, is married to Rachel Campos Duffy. She's one of my favorite news people. She's just lovely. She works for Fox News. I think I met her before at the March for Life. She's a sweetheart. Anyhow, I digress. Really nice message about being kind. And he also says to think about other people in terms of the way we dress. Let me share the story, and then we're going to play a soundbite for you. And I think hopefully the soundbite, in talking about just how busy it's going to be this weekend, now that, thanks be to God, the shutdown is over and people are back into the swing of things, airports are running up full strength again. But let's just see what he has to say first about being courteous and dressing well. So he says, airline passengers should be courteous ahead of the holiday season, emphasizing the importance of being well-dressed. How do we maintain maybe some of that frustration we have as we travel this Thanksgiving season? Maybe we should say please and thank you to our pilots and to our flight attendants. And he said this during a Monday press conference. I think, again, I'll call this just maybe dressing with some respect, you know, whether it's a pair of jeans and a decent shirt. And I would encourage people maybe dress a little bit better, which encourage us to maybe all behave a little better. He added, let's try not to wear slippers and pajamas as we come to the airport. He said, I think that's positive. I think he makes some good points. As Joan Lewis was saying earlier, you do feel better about yourself, I think, when you dress a little better. It doesn't mean, as I said, you have to go, you know, full on makeup and jewelry and everything, but you can be comfortable and you can look decent. And I think that's respecting yourself, and I think it's respecting other people as well. And I think just as importantly, as Christians, represent ourselves well and to be kind to people. And boy, are we going to have to pack our patience if we're traveling this weekend because of the crowds and because of the weather. So here's a clip from the Transportation Secretary, Sean Duffy, talking about Thanksgiving travel. Take a listen.
By car per AAA, we anticipate seeing 73 million Americans hitting the road this Thanksgiving season. We anticipate the busiest travel on the road in the afternoon of this coming Tuesday. We anticipate there'll be 1.2 million passengers this year by rail, a very big number. In regard to air travel, this is going to be the busiest Thanksgiving that we have on record. This week, there'll be 31 million passengers flying by air as we look to the week. That's per the airline industry. Tomorrow will be the busiest day. There'll be 52,000 flights tomorrow as Americans board aircraft, fly across the country. Maybe they're going to go to sporting events. Or hopefully they're going to spend time with their family. I fly a lot and I've had delays. I've had cancellations like many of you. But if you are delayed or you're canceled, know that it comes from a place of your safety and mind. If it's weather, if it's mechanical, if it's air traffic control, staffing issues, those are the factors that are considered as those decisions are being made. And again, it's strictly based on safety. And again, we want you to get to where you're going. And so safety is paramount.
So it's really important, I think, to remember, being that it is so, so busy, and he's describing it, giving us some more details in terms of the number of people traveling this weekend, yesterday, today, tomorrow, Friday. Many people even travel. I remember years ago when Deacon Dom and I first got engaged, we're talking well over 40 years ago, that we decided to fly out on Thanksgiving because it was the only time with work that we could make it. And it was crazy, but we did it and it was worth it. But to really just be nice to people, and just remind ourselves that everybody is trying to do the best. And okay, so maybe we will run into some people who may not be that pleasant. But think about the impression that we're giving others, especially from a Christian perspective. The other thing is to think about gratitude. This is Thanksgiving, a national holiday in the United States of America, and very important for we Catholics, for us Catholics as well, because the word Eucharist means Thanksgiving. And do you know that being grateful, having that attitude of thankfulness and gratitude, is actually good for you? Here's a report from a health foundation that I found. I have this in several of my books, by the way. Studies have shown that weaving gratitude into your daily routine can have far-reaching effects. Individuals who regularly practice gratitude often report reduced levels of stress, anxiety, and depression. Emphasizing the positive aspects of life has a potential to elevate feelings of joy and satisfaction. Studies have also shown a strong correlation between gratitude and physical health benefits, including better sleep, more energy, and a stronger immune system. Saying thank you can lead to deeper and more meaningful relationships with friends, family, and colleagues. Grateful individuals tend to cope better with adversity and bounce back from setbacks more quickly. Gratitude can be powerful, a tool for reframing challenges and finding the silver lining in the challenging situations. Is your glass half empty or half full? The responsorial psalm is beautiful today. Take a look at it and also read Canticle of the Creatures from St. Francis and think about being kind and grateful. It makes a huge difference. Be right back. Beautiful story of faith and family and the church recognizing this. Joining us this morning is Michael Pollack. He's an author and professor at the Bush School of Business. In a recent interview with the National Catholic Register, talking about the situation with his late wife, Ruth. And she's someone who passed away from cancer in 1998. She was a pro-life activist, a Catholic convert, mother of seven, Harvard graduate, and the Vatican cause for Dicastery for the Causes of the Saints has found reason to say that further investigation should be done to see whether someday the church should declare her a saint. Michael, thank you for joining us. And it was interesting with you, we were chatting during the break, and you're looking at this as something not so much, I mean, it is obviously meaningful for your family, but more meaningful for the church, correct? Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I mean, people have been writing to me the last couple of weeks when the news is out saying congratulations, and I want to be kind to them, but I kind of scratch my head and say, well, I've done, you know, I haven't done anything. It's not, you shouldn't congratulate me. And it's true that, you know, my late wife, I really do look at it impartially. That I look, I'd love for there to be somewhere in the United States an American mom with lots of kids who is pro-life, and you know, if you want, make her a Harvard graduate, because there's, you know, all that kind of visibility that comes from that, and to be raised to the altars. I think that'd be fantastic for the church. And, you know, if that's Ruth, you know, that's great. And you know, she certainly has a good claim to it. I mean, I think that, you know, the odor of sanctity, or the kind of reputation for holiness, certainly was followed her. That's for sure.
So tell me about her and her own faith journey, because she's a convert to the faith, correct?
Yeah, when I met her, we met as undergraduates at Harvard. We both considered ourselves atheists, and we were looking for meaning in life. I, because I had a near-death experience, and her, because she came to see her own kind of privileged life, so to speak, as meaningless. And so we started praying together, reading the Bible together, and first we became C.S. Lewis-type evangelical Christians, and then 3 years after that, we became Catholics from our experiences in various Protestant congregations, and also by reading. I think Newman is absolutely correct on this. To be steeped in history is to cease being a Protestant. That absolutely did happen with us. Mm-hmm. So then she converted, and you know, life presents us with invitations to convert. I mean, God does through our lives. And for Ruth, it was conceiving, when we conceived our first child, then it was we had a death of a child from crib death, 7 weeks old. Then a year after that, diagnosis for cancer. Then 2 years after that, diagnosis of metastatic breast cancer, which is a death warrant. Then 4 years after that, the actual metastasis to vital organs, which is, means death is coming very soon. So each of these things you can react to in a different way. If you react by entering more deeply into the life of faith and interiority and trusting God and prayer, recourse to the graces of the sacraments, then these become means of sanctification. And Ruth actually, you know, she really did that.
Let's talk about her conversion. I mean, you're talking about her conversion faith-wise, but along with that, didn't she at one point support abortion, and then she became a pro-life activist? How did that happen?
It actually, the very germ of it was a conversation, and I can still remember it very vividly. It was over lunch at Career House at Harvard, and I was being joined with a friend who is an evangelical fundamentalist Christian from Louisiana. And we just, you know, the way undergraduates do or used to do, we're just debating the ethics of abortion over lunch. And we kind of teamed up on Ruth because I'm out of conviction, myself out of just the kind of intuitive sense that the pro-life side was probably stronger in an argument. And we took, you know, 10 or 15 different dialectical steps and refuted every position she took. And she later on told me that at that time, inside her mind, she said, well, okay, they've refuted me. I don't have a tenable position here, right? But nobody ever on the spot says, you know, you refuted me, I changed my mind. So she didn't say that. And But it changed her mind. And then when she was carrying a baby for the first time, then really Newman speaks of the difference between notional assent and real assent. This is the change from notionally I think it's wrong to now I really understand what it would be to have an abortion. Right. And that was now active. And so that That was when I was in graduate school in Edinburgh, and we came back to Harvard and I started studying there. She attended a debate between Jack Wilkie, who was a great pro-life spokesperson of a previous generation, and the head of the National Abortion Rights Action League, and was so set on fire by what Jack said that she approached him later and said, "I really want to get involved. What should I do?" Jack told me later that he remembered very clearly this time when Ruth approached him, and she was very beautiful with long hair, and you know, he thought that she had to be a pro-choice spy who's trying to get some information out of him. He didn't take her seriously, but that was the start of it, that debate.
Amazing. We're talking with Michael Pakulik, his wife, of course. Ruth featured the story of their journey and her journey as well, featured in the Register recently, the National Catholic Register. And now the Vatican's Dicastery for the Causes of Saints has decided that Ruth's life merits further investigation to see whether someday she should be declared a saint. So how did she put this newfound pro-life ideal into action? What did she do? She said she wanted to get involved when she talked to Jack Wilkie. What did she do? Obviously, her family life was very pro-life, but what else did she do to make a difference in that area, do you think, Michael?
Well, she's always a very practical person, and she began by just once a week showing a pro-life film at Harvard. She got permission. She put together, she wasn't a student, but I was a student, and some other students. Carmen Junta was somebody, Karen Morin, who was in the law school. We formed a group, and it was Harvard Radcliffe Citizens for Life, and I'm pretty sure that's the first pro-life group that existed at Harvard. And she would show a film every week, and there'd be 10, 15 people there, but kept growing until, you know, hundreds of people were associated with it. And the majority were actually outside of Harvard University. They were from the Cambridge community. So then she founded the Cambridge Unborn Rights Advocates, CURA, which I advised her the Latin would be a very good term for that, because it also means care and concern. And this was a dynamic chapter of Mass Citizens for Life. And she got recognized by the leadership of Massachusetts Citizens for Life. And within a couple of years, they had asked her to become president. So she became president of the state pro-life group.
Wow. So she really put that into practice. That is amazing. Seriously, some people say, okay, now I'm pro-life and I believe this, but to get involved and to do something and to make sure she was witnessing it in such a bold way, especially at Harvard, you know, to make that statement with these various pro-life films, it must have been something. We're talking with Michael Pakulik, author and professor at the Bush School of Business at the Catholic University of America, and he spoke just a few weeks ago with the National Catholic Register. I just want to remind you of the article because it's still posted. You can still find it up there. It's just such a beautiful, detailed article about her life and her commitment to her husband, her family, and the pro-life cause. Vatican says sainthood cause for American mom of seven can move forward. Michael, when we come back, I want to talk about the impact. I know you're emphasizing, and this is a beautiful thing, about the church and how this is a great witness for the church, but the impact it has had on your family since the announcement came out. We'll be right back. Having a beautiful conversation with Michael Pakulik, who's an author, professor at the Bush School of Business at the Catholic University of America, about the big news that came out recently, the Vatican's Dicastery for the Causes of Saints. His wife, Ruth, her life, the Vatican says, merits further investigation to see whether someday the church will declare her a saint or could declare her a saint. So, Michael, I know you're very humble and you're looking at this at the big picture, which I think is awesome, but what are your children saying? And just in terms of your own thoughts, and again, I know you said that you are not taking this as something that's super personal for you, but it has to be somewhat personal because this is beautiful just for her to be recognized like this.
Well, I'm going to tell you something about myself, which is probably going to surprise you, which is this, that the whole reconsideration of Ruth's life, which for me has been somewhat submerged because, you know, I married again, we have eight kids, and we've been going full throttle here, has really, and my wife, Catherine, diagnosed it properly, it has led to a re-experiencing of mourning and grief. You know, grief comes in these waves, and they get more and more spread out over time, and then they diminish. But it was like a huge tsunami wave of mourning and grief hit me when this kind of reconsideration of Ruth's life. Yeah, so it's actually been kind of an emotional struggle. I'm not, you know, not in any, like, blessed are those who mourn. I mean, I'm definitely in sorrow and a certain kind of pain, and I felt the same shock of being in mourning. Like, my body was in a state of alertness, and I had no desire to eat, and I couldn't really sleep very well, and this went on for a couple of weeks. So that's very interesting, right? Who would ever have thought that? And yet that's my report on my own experience. Now, about the children, they divide into three groups. The children of the second wave, I sometimes call them the second family. They don't know that much about Ruth, and, you know, the book Appalling Strangeness is around, and I think some of them have read it, but they're stalwart pro-life people. They really are. Like, I have a son who was just graduated from Catholic University, and he went to every Saturday morning, whatever the weather, he was there with the Catholic University students praying the rosary in front of the abortion clinic. I mean, so, you know, to hear about this, it's just so encouraging, and you know, such a cause of jubilation, really, for the stalwart pro-life children that I have. And then the children, Ruth's children themselves, they divide into two. So some were really kind of young when Ruth passed away, and they've always thought of Catherine as their mom. They hardly even remember Ruth. So it's kind of, well, okay, this, you know, we'll start learning more about, we sometimes call her old mom in the household. So, and then the older kids, Max is, you know, he was quoted quite liberally in that article in the Register. You know, so they do have clear memories. And I think they're kind of astonished, actually, because, you know, most of the time that we lived in Worcester, we lived in a really, let's say, humble neighborhood. I drove by there recently. You can't even imagine. The place looks just horrible, and we took care of it, but it's this tiny house, and it was the least expensive house on the market at the time when I came out of graduate school, because that's all that we could afford. So think of Worcester. Think of the least expensive house in Worcester. And that's where we lived. And, you know, my kids are all prosperous. They're doing well. They've got great jobs. They've got families. And they think back to those times, and they can hardly believe it, like huddling next to the radiator in the morning to get heat, or, you know, this kind of thing. Or, you know, we finally got new carpets, the way they walked around like it was Wonderland, because they're actual, you know, instead of these kind of dirty matted things, they're actually like real soft carpets that we had. So it's such... You know what it's like. You think back to times when you didn't have that much money and things were really tight. Mm-hmm. And you love that. You love those times. They were very tough to go through, but you love them in retrospect. And that's what that's like for the older kids.
It's interesting you talk about the grief. It makes sense, but that's not what you said. It would surprise me, and it did, that it would bring back a whole wave of grief. And it's interesting because that's something, and I know you're a contributor to the Register, that perhaps, I mean, you know, Romans 8:28, all things work together, but offering up the suffering, is that something you had to do again as well when the announcement came out because of what you went through?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's the month of November. It's a great time for that.
Right.
I'm far from complaining. I'm really grateful for it, frankly. But, you know, this is kind of interesting, and Catherine, my wife, and I were thinking about it. I mean, somebody asked me the other day, if I were ever canonized, what would I be the patron of? You know, and I laugh, and I everybody's, as I said, working out their salvation with fear and trembling. But yeah, I said, yeah, I'd be the patron saint of love of one's wife, because, you know, losing Ruth really made me understand the value of a Christian woman as your wife. Because you kind of take it for granted. I don't know, if you get married when you're 19 in college, as Ruth and I did, you kind of take it all for granted. And then you lose somebody like that, and then, wow, you know. So I kind of am super, 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 super committed to and appreciative of Catherine, and that comes from having lost Ruth. So that you can't, it's like two sides of a coin. The emotion is kind of one and the same emotion. So you might want to say that the the extreme devotion I have to Catherine can at any moment become mourning at the same time. It's like it's two sides of the same emotion.
But I would imagine that this, I mean, you talk about marriage and the appreciation for you know, both of your wives, but I imagine it gives you an appreciation for the church teachings on marriage, church teaching on women, and also this beautiful new document that just came out from the Vatican on monogamy and how important it is to make that sacrificial commitment to another person in marriage, and it doesn't take away, it gives us so much more. So have you found that through this process, the grief, the good, the, you know, the bad, the struggles, that you've come to appreciate the church even more for what she gives us, even with the understanding of looking into the cause of canonization?
Absolutely, yeah, and that's such a gift that we want to hold up for young people. I'm going to tell you an extraordinary story. There's so many stories associated with this whole thing we're talking about, which are true, but you can't even believe them. So when Ruth was, you know, put into the ground, and there were lots of people at the cemetery, and kids had flowers, and they're throwing flowers onto the casket in the ground, and people were leaving, and I was standing at graveside continuing to pray, and people left one by one by one by one until there were just two people left. And I, of course, was deep in prayer and I didn't even notice. But one of them was Catherine, and the other was her mom. And she was the eldest daughter of some family friends, so I didn't even know her then. And I didn't even say hi to her. She was standing next to me at graveside. And I said out loud, because I kind of vaguely recognized somebody was standing next to me, I said, "Well, the vow says, until death do us part." And at that time, I kind of said, it's over. Like, the relationship is over. The marriage is at an end. That night, I took the wedding ring off of me. I know a lot of widows and widowers, you know, are kind of, they hold on to it. And that was not my way. I took it off and I said, "I'm no longer married. It's over." But how extraordinary is that? My current wife was standing next to me at the graveside and heard that. That's extraordinary. She told me that later.
Now, how did you meet your current wife? How did you meet Catherine?
Well, this is another extraordinary story. So it's 4 weeks before Ruth died, and I felt like, you know, I'm a philosopher, and I'm kind of, I'm not a very emotional person, at least not expressively so. I thought I had to kind of speak my mind at least plainly in case my behavior didn't show. And I said to her, "You know, you're so extraordinary person. I don't think I could ever meet anybody like you. I don't want to get married. I plan not to get married. There would never be anybody else like you. And besides, I can devote myself more fully to scholarship, which I love so much." And she took a deep breath and she said, "Well, I've always thought that Catherine Hardy would make a good wife for you. And now she's moved to Cambridge." In other words, I'm dying, and she's just moved to Cambridge to start graduate study at Harvard University. Mm. And she thought that was a sign that her intuition was correct, and she shared that with me. And she said, "I really think you should get married for the sake of the children." And I thought to myself at the time, this is very bizarre. Like, I decided to profess my exclusive love to my dying wife, and she's trying to match me up with somebody who, you know, just graduated from college. So that is very bizarre. So, you know, after I went through mourning, I figured, well, I kind of owe it to Ruth to kind of meet Catherine Hardy. So I had to go to Harvard for a Greek reading group anyway, and I said, "Let's meet for lunch." And well, we met for lunch. We met for lunch the next day, and we went to the Boston Symphony, and we went on dates, and we got married. And now we've been married far longer than Ruth and I were married. And Catherine jokes, "I'm now the oldest woman you've ever been married to."
Which is true. We have so many incredible stories. And I don't know if you've been asked this question before, but as an author myself, I keep thinking, what a great book this would make. I mean, regardless of what happens with Ruth's cause, just to talk about the journey, because I think so many people can relate to what you're saying in terms of grief and suffering and the process you go through. Have you thought about that?
Well, I'm kind of writing an intellectual and spiritual autobiography under obedience, I say, because Catherine has told me to write it. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting up to graduate school, and that's the easy part. Like, you know, the stuff that we're talking about now, it's very hard to put into words. And I sometimes say, you know, a woman needs to write this rather than a man.
I don't know. I think you're doing pretty well. I think
if I lay it on Catherine, she's going to be pretty upset with me. She told me to write it, so I guess I have to.
No, but I think it's very raw, but I think it's also very real. And that's what people need when they're going through difficult times. And also, you're giving us a different perspective. And I think it's really beautiful in terms of the church and what the church gives us in terms of the marriage, the sacrament of marriage, and you know, the whole idea of the cause of canonization, which is kind of, I don't know, we've heard so much about that in the last year because of Pier Giorgio Frassati and Carlo Acutis, but this is so close to home. Because we know you, we're familiar with you and your work, and many people are so familiar with Ruth.
Yeah, that's definitely true. What else was I going to say? It entered my mind and then thought that maybe it'll come back again. There was something very interesting. Oh, this idea. Yeah, so it's very edifying, I think, help for people is this kind of the smashing of the soulmates idea of marriage, which has taken place in my own life. I mean, I might have thought I was the soulmate of Ruth because we met in college and, you know, grew up together essentially. But, you know, I'm pretty darn happily married to Catherine. I saw this with the kids that, you know, within a couple weeks after Ruth died, if a woman came into the household, young girls especially would say, "Dad, is she married? No. Is she Catholic? Yeah. Then, well, why? What's taking you so long?" Like they wanted another woman in the house to be their mom. Like, it's, you know, make this happen fast. So it's kind of humbling for moms, but you know they want a Catholic woman taking care of them.
But that's a statement, though, I think, for the beauty of the faith and also the witness to Ruth, because that's why they wanted a Catholic girl.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, that's true. That's absolutely true.
Well, so I think, not that really you listen to my opinion or have any, I'm just saying, from my perspective, it's such a, you brought out so many very interesting points and the ups and downs of what someone goes through with something like this. And it's really, I think, very close to us because, again, of your work with Catholic U and the Register. And I just, it's fascinating. So thank you for being so personal with this interview, Michael. I really appreciate it.
There's no other way.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Well, let me wish you and Catherine and your family a beautiful Thanksgiving, and we're grateful for your testimony and for Ruth's life, and we will see what the church does. The church, as you said, is going to do what the church is going to do, but what a beautiful thing to look at, and thank you so much for sharing. Dr. Michael Bacalik, who's an author and professor at the Bush School of Business, talking about his late wife, Ruth, whose cause for canonization has been opened to see if she merits to be called a saint. Who knows? We'll see. We'll be right back. I don't know about you, but Richard and I were just talking during the break. My EP executive producer, Richard Jesse, he's got to do a book. Dr. McCulloch's got to do a book. It's just phenomenal, his honesty and the rawness. And that's what we need to hear, that we go through these things and we're not alone. Okay, remember that. Remember that. You're never alone when you're a Christian, right? First and foremost, we have Jesus in the church. So what is coming up? Well, a lot of us are going to be around a lot of people this week, and particularly this weekend, tomorrow, Thanksgiving Day, Friday, maybe you've got people staying with you. How do you handle those relatives and those friends that aren't always on the same page? Well, the one, the only, Dr. Ray Guarendi from The Doctor Is In, heard every day on EWTN, is going to be joining us. We're going to re-air the interview we played with him on Monday. So if you didn't hear it, and maybe you want to hear it again, or maybe tell people to tune in, I would highly recommend it because it's very good in terms of his practical advice. Maybe you don't want to hear what he has to say, but you should, because I think it's a reminder of how, again, we can be a great Christian witness this Thanksgiving. And then we are going to hear from one of our wonderful people at EWTN, Father Joseph Mary Wolf. He is going to be talking about Advent. There is a new series that is available for free. Just go to EWTN.com/Advent and you sign up and you get these beautiful videos that are very quick but very powerful. They're about, I don't know, 2 minutes long, 3 minutes long each. And so he was on with us last week and I wanted to bring that to you because Advent is starting on Sunday. Have a blessed and a safe Thanksgiving, and we'll talk to you, God willing, on a Monday. Ciao, ciao.